season 7, episode 2, and I'm here with Lamont Jones, who has written The Gist of Bidwist. Lamont is a boxing business attorney and executive. Lamont maintains that the deals most meaningful to him are not those he's negotiated or litigated on behalf of boxing managers, promoters, or champions. Instead, the contracts that most make his heart sing are those he enters and defends against at the card table, playing Bidwist. Jones believes that card games connect people and that the rich story of Bidwist is one that deserves to be widely known. Welcome, Lamont. Thanks for being here today.
Chris, thank you for having me. Thrilled to be here.
Yeah. So today, let's just talk about writing the book and talk about the game of Bidwist, too. I don't know that I put this in there as a direct question, but let's talk about starting to prepare to write the book. But even before that, let's talk about what is Bidwist. I know how to play now because I watched several videos. But like for those who aren't familiar with Bidwist as a trick-taking game, can you briefly explain it?
Sure. I think it's first, it's useful to point out that it's a partnership game. Mm-hmm. So it's not like blackjack where you're playing against the dealer. It's not like poker where you're playing against every other player at the table. You actually have a partner. And you're competing against another partnership. And as you mentioned, Chris, the objective is to win tricks. But before that trick-taking action starts, there's a conversation, and each side basically wagers how many tricks they expect to win during that round. And that adds a lot of spiciness and liveliness to the action. So yes, it's a trick-taking partnership game, and it's traditionally been played almost exclusively in Black communities. So yeah, that's Bidwist in a nutshell.
Very cool. So how did you prepare to write the book? Did you do a lot of research, or is this mostly from your own life, or a combination of both?
I think it's a combination. So, you know, early on, I'd hear scuttlebutt about Bidwist. You know, hey, Thurgood Marshall used to play Bidwist. Mm. And someone, you know, once mentioned that the Pullman Porters had a role in popularizing the game. So that sparked sort of research interest. So I'd, you know, look for anecdotes and look for research to sort of back up those claims. But then, you know, as a player, I didn't get to play as often as I wanted to. So on those few occasions where I would be able to play, you know, the games would stay with me for days, sometimes weeks, especially if I lost or if I made a mistake. When my daughter was about 8 years old, I learned something that stayed with me and served as a spark to start this book project. Her mom and I had gotten divorced. My daughter, Aaliyah, was about 6 years old at the time. And not long after that, we had her visiting with a therapist. And she told the therapist that she was angry and sad and upset about her new life. The therapist asked, have you told anybody about these feelings? Mm-hmm. And Aaliyah explained that she told her daddy. And the therapist says, well, why have you told your daddy? And in her eight-year-old way, she says, well, listen, when I'm with him, we're sitting there playing cards. And when you're sitting there playing cards, you got to talk about something. Mm-hmm. So that just sort of sparked the idea that these games are about more than just the fun and the competition. They're great vehicles for connection. So that sort of started me down the path of researching and writing this book.
Yeah, for sure. Did you write it during like the early part of the pandemic? Was that right? Or
I'd say I polished it during that time. So this has been a labor of love that's gone on for more than a decade. So you know, I started just by sort of writing essays. You know, I'd see something that interested me, like, you know, a great performance on Jeopardy or what the Golden State Warriors were doing in basketball. And I'd try to relate that to Bidwist. And then, you know, back then I was, let me go back a step. You know, in high school, I liked to coach our girls' football teams. And I'd sit in class all day and draw plays by hand. Okay. I suspect now that plays are done by computers and that sort of thing. But in many ways, I was doing that with Bidwist. You know, I sort of dream of hands and how would you teach this point and that point? And I'd sort of deal out the cards and make up a hand and then write an essay or a story about it. So that's how I got into writing the book. And after a while, I had sort of a stockpile of these stories, these sort of essays. And, you know, my wife suggested, hey, maybe you'll have a book here.
Yeah. So like what it seems like you bring a lot of experiences to the game and kind of filter it through the game. So what makes it interesting as a game besides the partnership element and what are the things that are going on in the game?
Sure. I think it's sort of a remix of familiar elements from card games, you know, we all know and love. So spades, and bridge, and oh hell, and euchre, the trick taking, the trump card games. So Bidwist finds a way to sort of remix these elements and ratchet up the action, ratchet up the intensity. So for example, in spades, you know, it's possible for both partnerships to submit a bid and make their bid on the very same hand. All right. Well, that can't happen in Bidwist. One team has to win each hand. One team has to lose, right? Mm-hmm. And the game is short, so it's a sprint to the finish, and you know requires sort of maximum sustained effort throughout. So that's I think that sort of combination, that remix of familiar card game elements, is primary. And then, as you alluded to, you know, you've got the sort of the clash of personalities. You've got the smack talk and the witty banter and that sort of thing. So that adds some extra juice for sure.
Yeah. Let's go back to what you mentioned about the game being unique to part of the Black community, especially Pullman Porters. Why did that happen kind of historically? Go ahead.
Yeah. Interesting question. I think, first of all, the Porters occupied a pretty unique role in society in that, you know, other than, say, the entertainers, they were the ones who actually traveled. They weren't sort of tethered to a job in a specific location. They traveled from place to place. So they were sort of cosmopolitan citizens. And, you know, they not only delivered news, you know, the newspapers like the Chicago Defender or the Pittsburgh Courier, or, you know, talk about opportunities, job opportunities, social opportunities up north, or, you know, what the latest blues records were coming from down south. They were sort of purveyors of culture in various communities across the country. And you had the situation where from time to time, you'd have hundreds of porters gathered in a single place on layovers in New York or Chicago or Kansas City. And when they got together, their activity of choice was their game, Bidwist. You know, they played it so much it was called the Porter's game. So I think the fact that that it was such an integral part of Porter life, that they had such influence in communities across the country, is what helped them popularize the game throughout the nation.
Were they doing tournaments too, like betting on the game or seeing who could be the best at it or anything like that?
I don't know about betting. I suspect that, you know, maybe there was more than just pride on the line in some of these gatherings.
Sure.
But if you got, you know, a gathering of 100 or 200 different porters trying to, you know, see which partnership is the best, I'm sure that can get quite competitive.
Oh, sure. I mean, like Star City Games was just in town here a couple weeks ago for Magic and other games. And like, you know, there's definitely more than just pride on the line sometimes when you get a big group of people together.
No doubt. But hey, I'm glad you mentioned that, Chris, because, you know, I used to spend quite a bit of time at the casinos even before I got into the boxing business. Mm-hmm. But I remember playing in a chess tournament when I was in my late 20s or early 30s. I was probably the only person in the room under 50 at the time. And it got down to I was making a critical play toward the end of the game. And as I placed my card on the table, my hand was actually shaking. And then it occurred to me then, you know, if I'm getting this kind of thrill, this much excitement from playing bridge and I'm not gambling, you know, maybe I don't need to spend as much time as I had been at the casinos.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. I mean, there definitely is a thrill to being like, I'm the best at whatever this thing is that I have spent time perfecting my skills at. So what type of skills really come in handy as you play Bidwist?
I suspect that some might say, well, I suspect that some might fear that you'd have to be, say, a mathematician or something like that to do well at the game. I don't think that's the case, right? Mm. You need to be able to count up to 13, but you know, we can master that skill. I think that the best players, though, they're fluid, they're flexible, right? They're not always cautious, for example, or they're not always hyper aggressive. they understand the rules and the fundamentals of the game so well that they can transcend those rules and fundamentals. And in that way, they remind me of my favorite boxers, right? I think of how Floyd Mayweather, for example, I love the way that he moves sort of instantaneously from defense to offense, right? Mm-hmm. And within his offensive arsenal, he's got it all. He's got the jabs and the hooks and the straight punches and the movement and that sort of thing. And I think the best mid-whist players have that kind of variety, that kind of flexibility, that kind of knowledge of the game and the ability to deploy whatever is necessary whenever it's necessary. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, would you talk about that a little bit more? Because my audience is often like hobby gamers and people who are more familiar with card games, board games, tabletop games, and might not know about some of the tactical things that go on in boxing and other physical sports and how that can relate. So you've advised boxers and you know a lot about that. Could you bring that in a little bit more, because you've obviously touched on some of that, but I think my opinion is I think there's probably a lot of similarities going on there.
Yeah. I think the first thing is, you know, if you're playing these games, bid-whist, spades, bridge, especially if you're playing them at a high enough level with enough intensity, you've sort of moved from the realm of games to the realm of mind sport. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think it's fair that some of these games at some levels can really be fairly characterized as sports. So there's that level of similarity to be sure.
Mm-hmm. I guess to say it a different way is like, what's going on? Tell us what's going on in the mind of a boxer. Like, because I think that's what would be unfamiliar, right? The things that you're saying about bid-whist, that sounds familiar to somebody who's playing a game. But what's going on in the mind of a boxer that is more than just I need to punch and I need to punch again? Like, yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Okay, well, listen, at the beginning of each and every boxing match, the referee tells the combatants, protect yourself at all times, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, that sort of protection of oneself, that sort of survival is fundamental. But if boxers, you know, went in with that as the primary mindset, probably wouldn't be very fan friendly, right? So the best boxers, they sort of navigate that line between, you know, protecting themselves, but inflicting damage on the opponent, right? And you're right, Chris, it's not just, you know, it's not just a matter of sort of brute force. You know, these guys apply a sort of science, you know, to what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. How do you not just seize the openings that are readily apparent, right? How do you create openings and then exploit them, right? If I throw a jab to the body, how does this person react? Okay, maybe maybe the opponent sort of dropped his right hand to try to catch my jab. Okay, I'm going to note that for later, right? Mm-hmm. I'll go away from that for now and maybe, you know, try some other tactics, but at the right moment, I'm going back to that jab to the body, not to score the jab to the body, but to exploit the opening that was created when the opponent dropped his right hand to try to block it. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's what the best boxers do. And I think the same thing obtains with the best bid-whist players, with the best card players, right? They're not just here to seize the tricks that might be dealt to them. Right. So you got ace, king, queen, whatever, you can seize those right from the beginning. No, they do more than that. They develop tricks that they can score later in the hand, right? So, so that at the end of the hand or the round, they're winning tricks not just with the aces and the kings, but with eights or sevens or threes or what have you. So, they master strategies and tactics that enable them to do that, and they have the mindset going in of not just seizing what's obvious and available, but developing extra tricks and other tricks in order to make their contracts and thwart the opponents.
Yeah, pacing is super important in trick taking games, especially some of the older ones. That some people initially will be like, there's not a lot of choice with things. Obviously, there's some more choice in bid-whist, but how do you approach pacing and like when to play or when to take a trick versus hold on to things as you play Bidwist?
Yeah, I like that question. I think it goes back even before you start the trick taking action, right? Like, So do I need to be aggressive in the auction before the hand starts, right? In order to be the one to establish the trump suit, or you know, should I be more conservative? And because if you win the auction, you've also entered into a contract where you have to win enough tricks to score points, or you lose points, right? So so sometimes the best option is to force your opponent to win that auction and then play to set them. So I think the outstanding Bidwist players, the outstanding card players, navigate that line as well as the pacing of winning tricks within the hand.
So again, for those who aren't familiar with the game, it has an uptown, a downtown, and then play with trumps or without trumps, right? Is that correct?
You've nailed it. You've been paying attention. I like to contrast it with spades, for example, in this way. Sometimes you're playing spades, and of course, in spades, the trump suit is always spades, right? The ace, king, queen, jack, the high cards always win. And you might be sitting there thinking, man, I haven't been dealt any spades all night, or I haven't been dealt any aces and kings and queens all night. Mm-hmm. In Bidwist, you know, no matter which cards you're dealt, you still have the ability and even the incentive to be aggressive in the auction, because maybe you don't have any spades, but you have a lot of hearts, or you have a lot of diamonds. And if you win the auction, you can declare those suits to be the trump suit and thereby, you know, take control of the hand.
Yeah. So getting away from gameplay as such, tell me, you talked a little bit about your daughter and the conversations she was having, with you. Why do you think this game in particular is conducive to good conversations?
Great question. I saw a quote just this week that blew me away. It was from the artist Carrie Mae Weems. And the quote is, within seriousness, there's little room for play. But within play, there's lots of room for seriousness. Mm. And I think that applies at the Bidwist table. The play part is certainly front and center. When I say play, I'm talking about gameplay and strategy and competition, of course. But I'm also talking about the banter with the people at the table and the people in the room. That's a big part of the fun of a Bidwist gathering. But you can also have, you know, those moments of bonding and those moments of serious conversation that last beyond the evening. That's certainly been my experience. And in the Gist of Bidwist, I tell a lot of stories about, you know, my daughter playing cards with me in this situation or that situation, or playing cards with my wife or my son. And you hear a lot from my law school buddies. You know, we started a relationship back then that's lasted now more than 30 some years. Mm-hmm. But those relationships and those bonds, I think, really give the game its magic. And what I'm trying to share is, you know, the how to and why to play Bidwist, to be sure. But I'm also trying to share that joy that comes from those bonds and you know, empowering people to create their own bonds using the magic of Bidwist.
That's awesome. As you think about what you would want to do next with your book and the game, and this wasn't a prep question, so if you need a second to think, but like, what would be the ideal situation? You know, not just your book selling well, but what would you really like to see come out of your book being out there in the public?
Couple things. Number one, I'm hoping that 2024 can be the year of the great Bidwist resurgence, right? I think I'd like to see Bidwist claim the throne as sort of the standard bearer for trump card games. And I marshal arguments in the book as to why I think that should be the case. But more importantly than that, I'd like to see Bidwist reclaim a place of cultural prominence. So that's a driving goal for me. But also, like I said earlier, I really do believe that card games connect people. And if we can, enhance, connections across social divides, you know, within families, within friend groups, and if Bidwist can play a part in that, man, I will feel that this has really been a worthwhile effort.
That's fantastic. Anything else that you would like to share about? When does the book come out and where can people find it?
February 27th is the official publication date, but it is available for pre-order now. I'd encourage you to go to Amazon to pre-order The Gist of Bidwist. And I hope you enjoy the stories of luminaries who play, and I hope you enjoy the game strategy discussions and the game theory discussions. And I'm really protective of newcomers, right? I certainly welcome people who already play card games, bridge, spades, euchre, hearts, et cetera. But I'm protective of newcomers, and I want to teach them the game in a structured, unintimidating way. And I've made lots of effort to do that. So even people who think, you know, I can never play card games, I just don't have the card playing game, the card playing gene, I think the Gist of Bidwist is for you as well.
That's cool. And to let you know, actually, when I was at my neighborhood recreation center this last week, I saw that they had a tournament coming up for Bidwist specifically. So
they're in Cincinnati.
Yeah, right here in Cincinnati at the College Hill Recreation Center, Cincinnati Recreation Commission. So
we need to talk about this online. Offline. I always find any excuse I can to get to Cincinnati because I love to visit Jeff Ruby's establishment. Oh. And the last time I was in Cincinnati was one of the best nights or the best Saturdays of 2023 for me because my beloved Oklahoma Sooners came into Cincinnati and won a big football game.
Fair enough. I think there were a lot of people sad that night, but I'm glad you were having a good time.
There you go.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Lamont. I appreciate your insights and all the success with your book.
Chris, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for spending time with the Gist of Bidwist. I really appreciate it.